Greetings. I'm John Jarosiewski, Assistant Chancellor for University Advancement at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and this is Parkside Today. In 2018-19 academic year, the university is celebrating our 50th anniversary. It's a significant milestone. It's an ideal time to have in our studio Mike and Sheila Falbo, as they have seen the growth and the changes to both the UW Parkside and the UW system over many years. Mike is a 1980 graduate of the University of Wisconsin Parkside, as well as Regent Emeritus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside system, where he spent 11 years governing Wisconsin's public colleges and universities, including a two-term as president that ended in 2015. Nearly four decades of success in banking industry have informed an impressive and significant support for our state and UW Parkside. We're also joined by his wife, Sheila. Together, they have been allies, advocates, and donors to the continued growth of our university. Mike and Sheila Falbo, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you. Always happy to be here.
Thank you.
Mike and Sheila, let's talk a little bit, about your journey together as a family, which includes education. You've both been deeply engaged in education, both here at UW Parkside as well as across the state of Wisconsin. Might you be able to share with us how this engagement has enriched your life, how it's impacted how you see the world, how you raised your family?
Education played such a big role in our lives. From day one, I was able to come back from Vietnam a month early to start the fall semester in 1971. Now, that got me out of the jungle, but that's not important. My life isn't worth more than the person who had to replace me. But at the time, it meant a lot to us. So I went back to school right away. We were married 3 months later, and a year after that, along came our first child. So school was put on hold and turned into 9 years of night school. So you can see that how important education was to us. It could have saved my life, but put our lives together. And we've kind of felt that was an inspiration that we've carried on through our children and through our community work.
Sheila?
Yes.
How about the importance of education for your children and your family?
It's very important. We have two daughters, and they were lucky enough to come to both of our college graduations. So they knew right away that they were going to college, because it took us a long time to get our degrees, and that's just the way it went.
And so they were a part of your own educational journeys.
Yes.
They were.
Yes.
Our youngest daughter went to daycare here. So she would tell her friends that I go to the same school as my father.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. She said, I go to Parkside. She was four.
Isn't that something? So really generations of Falbos on campus on a regular basis.
Early on.
From early on.
And Sheila worked here. Worked in the mailroom.
When we moved to Racine, we were stretching back. Well, we always stretch when you're a young married couples. And I needed to go back to work. And somehow I got in the mailroom here. And so I put her across the street in the daycare at that time. And I worked almost full time. I think it was through the week. Sorting mail, delivering to the different rooms and that. I had a ball.
That's fantastic. That's what this interview is all about.
That's right.
Learning a little bit more. That's incredible. So how about today? As we start off with the Falbos here and sort of level setting on what you've been doing, how is your life guided today?
Well, we're obviously at a senior stage of our life, so trying to take it a little bit easy. But we will never get out of the area of education. We will never stop supporting higher education. We will never stop supporting UW Parkside and all the other UW schools. My term as president makes me be a little more global than UW-Parkside, but this one's number one. And we still are active, not as much as we used to be, but we're still active with this university, and we enjoy it. It's a commitment. We needed this. This doesn't sound like I made a lot of bad decisions. I needed to go to school initially because we needed the GI Bill money to pay the rent. And that whole process, getting out early, coming to Parkside, getting married, our kids coming to the graduation, once it got closer, it became the most important thing to finish. But the process of getting there maybe had different influences than attaining the degree. But the degree became very important at a later time.
So in essence, the journey of Parkside included your own realization and discovery of the value of education.
Very much so.
And Sheila, what was that like? Needing the GI Bill to pay the rent and he was going to go to school. Did you have hope he would graduate?
Yes, I did. You know, we were so young, and that's the happy time of your life when you're first married and you're struggling, but it doesn't seem like it's a struggle. We're working on it together, and it was great.
Fine.
We did it. You know, we had those long nights figuring out, what are we going to do now?
That's fantastic. That's a wonderful Parkside story that I didn't know until just now. Thank you for sharing that. Can we talk a little bit about Regent Falbo?
Sure.
Thank you.
Emeritus, remember.
Emeritus Regent.
Always well, has been.
Right? Has been. The former Regent Emeritus now, Falbo. You've as Regent, as a Regent and then Regent President, I imagined you learned a lot about governance in a very large, 170,000 students organization. And in that, can you tell us a little bit, did you have some self-discovery and some business learnings around collaboration and negotiation when you're working with so many stakeholders, such as students, faculty, chancellors, regents, legislators, and then the taxpayers?
Very much so. When I ran our banking company, which we took public in the early 90s, so that was a different influence on how to manage a company. But then to get involved in higher education, where there's so much more collaboration, and you want to do the right things. But of all those constituencies you mentioned, there's not one decision you can ever make that will please them all at the same time. And you have to learn that. You have to learn to deal with it, and you have to learn to prioritize what's the most important. So students are always first. And in the long run, hopefully your decisions benefit everybody, but in the short run, they don't. Some constituency is going to be offended, taken aback by some of the things you do. But having said that, what it taught you is how to collaborate more. The number of places you had to go to be informative. Now, when I ran my company, I was it. You make a decision, you go with it. Good decision, you get the credit. Bad decision, you blame somebody else. in this form, in higher education, it's much more involved. So now I get done with all of this. And I think to myself, or shared with Sheila, I feel so capable of managing something now with all these different influences I've had from the business world and then higher education, and I have nothing to manage. So it was a great experience. And every step of the way was a learning experience. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. We certainly had our challenges, very big challenges, still do. Higher education is always evolving. There's nothing static about it. I think if you can really buy into that, you can do a much better job going forward.
It must be a fascinating term of service. And I think about you, Regents, and Emeritus Regents, and the decisions you have to make and the process by which you have to follow and the scope of your decisions. But even in my capacity as an employee, I'm not that close, but Sheila, the idea here is you came as close to anybody as being a regent, but you are a private citizen and an onlooker. How was Emeritus Regent's experience from your perspective? And more than that, what did you learn about his, what every regent is expected to do? And is that a good role for the citizens of the state to be in a governance role of the public university system?
I think so. I think it brings different people to the table with different ideas, and it helps. It expands everybody's horizon. It was a real honor for them to be appointed by the governor to just be there. And then it's a big commitment and dedication and time consuming for a volunteer job.
Isn't that something?
But they were really, I loved watching when it was in the public. You know, they all go in the afternoon, they would go into their private session, but to watch them.
The regents meeting.
Work on their, you know, they had to work in the open and on their feet, and they did a really good job.
It is quite an impressive display. We will be hosting a regents meeting here during our 50th anniversary year. The October regents meeting will be back at UW-Parkside after 5 years away. We're really honored and excited, but the campus too has a lot of preparations to make to prepare for the kind of quality that is expected by the Board of Regents to manage a very, very important set of constituents. And
to show them your campus. It's that your opportunity to show them what you can and can't do. And that was the impressive part, is I was born and raised in Wisconsin, and there's a lot of campuses I had never seen. And when Michael had a meeting further away that I had never gone to, I said, I'll ride along. I'd like to see the campus and see the area and see the students. It's amazing how the colleges gear to the students of the area, and they're all different. The schools are all different.
It's amazing. Truly, it really is. And that's what's so unique about our system, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I used to apologize to every campus we held our meetings at for all the trouble we put them through to hold a regent meeting. Mm-hmm. But I also know that it's their time to shine. The first meeting where I was at the table on the Board of Regents was at UW-Parkside.
That seems fitting.
It does. It does seem fitting. And to go back a little bit, Sheila and I both, we didn't come from places that knew how or supported higher education. My parents didn't finish high school. So when they talk about first generation college students, I was a first generation high school graduate. Sheila's parents were hard workers. So they really didn't know to push us in that direction. So that's the reason I'm telling you this is that one of the reasons we're so appreciative to have come from that and to have been honored to be part of the Board of Regents. And Sheila was just as much a part of it as I was. She came everywhere.
I sense that.
And that helped me tremendously. So we're just honored that we've had this experience, and certainly honored that the background of that is UW-Parkside.
Isn't that the beautiful thing about the UW system, which I obviously admire, is that we are bringing the university to every corner of the state and creating access and opportunity for all students that have the desire to learn from a best-in-class university system. As you referenced, Mike, I do have the data on top of my head for Parkside. About 60% of our graduates on an annual basis are the first in their family to receive a college degree. It's significant. It's significant for them as individuals, but only it's equally significant for our region to give access and opportunity to build our region. So that's a beautiful segue to the Falbles and Parkside, continuing that line of inquiry. You know, we've been here 50 years. In your recollection, do you recall when you first realized the University of Wisconsin is in my community?
Oh, sure we do, because I started going here when you were 3 years old. So we've been part of that fabric.
The university, not me.
The university.
I was actually one when you started. No.
So it's been a part of our life. That was before the campus was here. There was the campus, which is now Mary D. Bradford, and there was a building in Racine that had classes on the lakefront, and that's where I started between those two locations. So we certainly firsthand saw the evolution of this university.
Isn't that something?
I can't tell you that we were aware of everything that was going on. We certainly weren't, but years later, or now in hindsight, we sure appreciate it.
Yeah. Sheila, any thoughts on your growing awareness that UW-Parkside was a force that just entered our community and was destined to grow?
I probably, at the time, I didn't realize all that. But with Kenosha and Racine being such big cities in the state and not having a college down here to, you know, a public college, mm-hmm. to take care of the students, and I thought that's, in the long run, it was one of the better things that we did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So after 50 years, we're just so proud of that milestone. But I'm spending a lot of time in my work going through the archives, finding images and pictures of them cutting this campus out of an apple orchard, mm-hmm. and talking to the early faculty and our early alum, such as you. Any favorite faculty members you remember, or is that going to be hard over a 10-year span of pursuing a degree?
There's two that I remember very well. Professor Keene was an economics teacher, and I already had a career going in banking. I was vice president of a bank while I was going to night school, and he would tell me, he said, "You should be up here, I should be in the audience." And I said, "I'm just trying to get through." So, but then there was another one. He was an ad hoc professor, worked at the lighting company, I can't remember the name of it now, in South Milwaukee. And he was my last class. And advanced cost accounting, too. And I was done with all my tests. We went home. Sheila and I, the kids went to bed, and Sheila and I were having a celebration, a dinner, and for completing this journey. The phone rang. And it was that professor. And he said, "Mike, I want to talk to you about your final exam." Well, I got weak in the knees. went down.
As every student might.
Food was just getting put on the table.
Hold the food, honey.
I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, no, everything's good. He said, "You got all the answers right, but you didn't show the process in all cases." And I said, "What are we talking about here?" And he said, "The difference between an A- and a B+. And I said to him, "I thank you so much for caring enough to take your time to call me. But a B+ is a very good grade, and my dinner's getting cold."
That's a wonderful story.
That never left me, because he did everything he could to make sure that we did the best we could.
Isn't that fascinating? And I hear that from our alum all the time. And they ask me, I go visit them in Florida, or I go visit them in New Jersey, or 60% of our alumni are right here in southeastern Wisconsin. They'll ask me, "How about Professor so-and-so? Can you give me his contact information?" And if I have it, I'll extend it to him. But they have this, it's about the faculty and the students, and that's what most carry away. We talk about our 700 beautiful acres, and they truly are, our magnificent architecture, which it truly is. But in the end, those experiences between the faculty and the students are so special.
Yes.
So we've touched on this a little bit, but, you know, the unique Mike Falbo story, which in my mind is heroic, being called out of the jungles of Southeast Asia. My father, as we mentioned before the interview, was also in Vietnam at the same time. I was born on Great Lakes Naval Base. Though it's a big part of who I am and who I became. How about today? Do you think there's those heroic stories out there for today's students?
There's no question, and maybe more. And maybe we don't always understand them, which we didn't understand them in 1970 either. It's now, and as my time as a regent, I know it's one of the top priorities is to provide opportunity to people that might not otherwise get that opportunity. no matter where they came from, whether they came from the military, whether they came from a very hard upbringing, whatever the case may be, this is what we do, and this is what we do so well. And you said it earlier, 60% first-time college, first-generation college students, and we can never lose sight of that. That always has to be part of our goals and our strategic planning. And yes, there's as many great stories or more now than ever.
Any feelings on that, Sheila?
I agree with exactly what he said. Yeah, there's the same stories now that there probably were as 50 years ago. It's just that, you know, they have to really, really want to be a student and to graduate, and they'll find a way to do it.
They will find a way.
And we will, our commitment, not Sheila and mine, but everybody here, everybody in higher education is that same, is to help them get there.
That's right.
They'll find a way, and we'll help whenever possible.
I know that's one of the strongest impressions I have of our faculty staff under the leadership of Chancellor Debbie Ford. The term student success is something seemingly continuous on her lips and on her mind. And I'm so proud of her commitment. How about our Chancellor, Felbos? you know her well as friends, as colleagues. A little insight into our chancellor and your relationship and why you sustain it over time.
Well, I won't tell you everything because I'm still afraid of her. But I can tell you that and you just mentioned the student first. But there's a lot that goes into that statement. Education today and how you deliver it and how you achieve it is much different than it used to be. What Debbie Ford has brought to this campus is the ability to get all constituencies on the same page, heading the same direction. And some of those constituencies didn't exist as much years ago. The community involvement, the business involvement. What do you need out there? We need to provide what you need, and we commit to providing what you need. This is a new day. And it's a great direction to go. Now, I'll tell you this. There's 13 chancellors and one president of the system, and I voted on all of them.
Mm.
So what that tells you is I went through a lot of searches.
But you've also walked the entire journey with Chancellor Ford.
Yeah, I chaired the committee that hired her, and I'm very proud of that. And she is doing a great job. She continues to know what you have to change, and that's the most important thing, what you have to change to be more successful as time goes on. And it's all related to student outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I very much enjoy her passion for our students. And I can tell you in our audience that our students know who she is.
Oh, yes.
She is not a faraway person.
And she's very excited about the whole campus and the job and everything. And you can see that in her personality.
It's really helpful. So how about our campus? Just in terms of its physical presence, it's beautiful. We all love it here that work here, and our students enjoy it. It's sort of a hidden jewel, 700 acres tucked away here in southeastern Wisconsin. In your mind, what's the biggest change? How has that evolved in your time, obviously?
Well, remember, when I started, it wasn't here. So there's a big change right there.
That is
there.
A dramatic change.
And actually, today I did find the library.
For the first time.
Yes. Very well-kept secret. This is a beautiful environment to learn. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful campus. It's contained, which in Wisconsin is a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's only two campuses that are like that, and that's Parkside and Green Bay. And they were built at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a history of what was the way to deliver education at that time. And mm-hmm. and I think it's relevant and current today.
I would agree. I love our buildings. I love how they're assembled. And I love the access and the collegial nature and the integrated nature of our learning spaces where students and faculty see each other from across departments, colleges, disciplines. It's really, really a value there. I believe our campus has come of age.
I do, too. And the dorms help, too. I remember years ago when they first started, there were no dorms. So the students would come, go to class, and go home. It was almost like being in high school. But now you've got that community feeling mm-hmm. here, and the exchange students are here. And, I mean, it's a whole small campus.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. So you touched upon it, Mike, the future of Parkside. I have here in my notes, Parkside today and tomorrow. You touched upon relationships with the business community. If most of us are aware, there's significant opportunity coming to southeastern Wisconsin with the economic development boom that's underway in this region. German candy company and manufacturer moving into Pleasant Prairie, and a Taiwanese flat screen producer, global companies each. What's the opportunity for Parkside in between those kinds of activities?
I guarantee you those companies didn't come here without doing a lot of research. And part of that research was, can the higher education system here bring us the people we need with the qualities that we need? And so the answer is absolutely. But it's a new challenge for us, that we have to be so tied into what the needs of the community are in our education system, that we have to deliver everything they need and more. We have to continue our research. We have to continue our support for first-generation students. It's such a positive challenge right now that you can put your arms around and you can feel good about, and you can see that we will be more relevant in the next 50 years than we ever have been.
Well stated. Sheila, any thoughts on that?
No, when he does that, I just sort of listen.
So, our last sort of area I wanted to cover in this conversation is around philanthropy. How do individuals or corporations engage in the long-term success of our university, which is not something Wisconsin's used to talking about extensively in terms of, you know, supporting a public university system. But you, Mike, you've been here with us as a member of our foundation board decades ago and helped establish the foundation. So what is the purpose of the foundation as you were a part of it, the UW-Parkside Foundation?
I think the purpose of the foundation is a couple of things. One is to support education at this university. And to do that, giving is number one. That's why a foundation is there. But also, you have community leaders on your board, and it's important to listen to them so that the university itself can be more relevant, can help set the strategic plan going forward. And you do, and you always have listened to your foundation board, and it's a very good thing. They don't have authority in the university.
No.
But they're very, very important to the chancellor and to you and to everybody here, not only to raise funds, but to help you set strategic plans. Now, having said that, they have a need too. It's not a one-way street. A lot of companies have deferred their research dollars and set up partnerships with universities, and you have them here. We maybe haven't yet learned how to leverage that into, and we need to keep working on that, how to leverage that into more dollars for the university so we can do a better job for our students and we can do a better job for them. But it's the transition that's going on, that mm-hmm. we're more relevant to the community. First of all, we are a big piece of the economic strength of any community. We employ a lot of people. They spend in our community. We're very important for these communities to be successful also. And we have to deliver on our role to help these companies be successful too. So it's that community relationship. It's one of the many big strengths that Chancellor Ford brings here, and I think we're doing a very good job with that.
Sheila,
he did it again.
He's good, isn't he? Well, I'll change the question. Thank you, Mike. That's very well stated, and you have ample experience to evidence what you're doing about it and how we can move forward. And you're a good partner of our foundation and university. But Sheila, when we talk about giving, you and I had a chance to talk about an opportunity to give your precious gifts to others. Why do you and Mike invest in education or in charitable enterprises at all?
We just feel that it's important. It's important for the future. We've put money aside for our grandchildren, And we've put money aside as our great nieces and nephews have been born for their education. So, yes, we feel that education is very important.
You're creating a legacy for your family moving forward, that the way to your future is through education. So say Mike and Sheila, and partner with us. So you have said the same thing to the UW Parkside Foundation and our students. You've made an investment in us through a planned gift. That might not be something most of our donors and constituents are familiar with. Planned giving is really a contribution that's arranged in the present to be given to students well into the future. Can you talk about a little bit on your strategy on why you started that? We have very few planned gifts in our foundation, but you two are leaders in that regard.
It's long-term thinking that we have to think past today. We have to think past our current budget challenges, and we have to think to future generations. And that was a way for us to hopefully keep having an impact for the student's success in the future, no matter what's going on.
So Mike and Sheila, you've agreed to serve as honorary co-chairs of the relaunch of the Wiley Society for Planned Giving. And the university is so pleased and honored to have your support in that regard. And so we look forward to continued conversations with Mike and Sheila. And we look forward to engaging you with others who might consider a planned gift to the UW Parkside Foundation in support of future generations of students. As you most eloquently said, Mike, our next 50 years are going to be more robust and more exciting than the first 50, if that's hard to imagine. So Mike and Sheila, thank you so much for joining us on Parkside today.